We wanted to know if after HB 56 in Alabama and with a Trump administration, whether or not people in this part of the South were feeling the same fears and anxieties that they had back in 2011 when HB 56 first passed. There are reports of immigration raids happening all across the country. Detentions have increased by 40% since President Trump took office. And at the same time, the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville last month shook people of color all over the nation. DACA is also in the process of being dismantled. Yet many of the other immigration policies promised by President Trump are up in the air. So all of this creates a thick tension for immigrants and people of color.
So let's take it back to fellow producer Jeannie Montalvo's family, who we met last episode. They're Dominican and moved to a small town in Alabama in the late 80s, where everyone else was either white or black.
Despite being told that they could be only black or white and that there was no in-between, they seem to really enjoy the South now. They left southern Alabama for the metro Atlanta area, and they've been living there for 25 years. So we wanted to know, has anything changed for the Montalvos since the Trump administration? But before we can even ask that question, we have to go back to where it all started.
Yes. I'm a really bad co-pilot.
Yes, you are.
I'm a really terrible co-pilot. We've already made like three wrong turns.
We headed to Brewton, Alabama, where the Montalvo settled in as the only Latino family.
Back in the 80s, Brewton had around 5,000 people. It was the kind of town where your neighbors greet each other with cherry pies and everyone knew each other. In episode one, my mom put us in the car and left town in the middle of the night, after being warned of a KKK march. She didn't see them with her own eyes or experience the KKK firsthand, but someone from the local community college did.
And I don't know if the year's exactly right, 84, 85, somewhere along that line. We woke up to find two crosses. One was burned in the street, and then one was burned in the yard close to my sister's bedroom.
That's B. We're only using his first initial to protect his safety. We caught up with him at a Mexican restaurant close to Brewton. And even though he and his family are white, back in the day, the KKK targeted them.
And we always felt that stemmed from the rumors that were going around in school at the time that one of my sisters might have been dating a black student. And at that time, interracial relationships were, they weren't accepted. Someone vandalizing the local water tower using my sister's names, he said their names loved and then had the N-word up on the water tower.
B also remembers being left home alone as a kid when his mother vanished out of the blue.
My mother had gone back to her home place in Pennsylvania to visit, and she stayed gone longer. I think she was supposed to go 2 weeks, stayed gone nine, and some of these numbers aren't exact, but she stayed gone a while.
His mother didn't have a good reputation in town. She and B's father married and divorced several times. She had relationships outside of marriage, and she didn't attend church. When B's mother had skipped town, he was left unsupervised at the house, so he snooped around in his parents' closet.
I said, I found a letter addressed to my mother, and it was signed not by name, but from the Klan, basically stating because of the lifestyle that they viewed my mother living, they viewed that as unacceptable in the community in which we live. You know, she had a reputation of being someone that might be considered loose, and it was a threatening letter. I think that shaped why she stayed gone for a long period of time.
That was 30 years ago. But some of that tension is still brewing. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, there are 27 hate groups in Alabama today. And hate groups and hate crimes nationwide have been on the rise since Trump's win. Many white supremacists and those in the extreme right see this as proof of their power and influence. And all of this has brought increased tensions to our country. But as you might guess, this is especially true in an area like the South, which has its own complicated racial history.
B is a pastor and a registered Republican, and he started feeling tension and division between himself and his neighbors.
I've heard this said many times that people find it hard for a person to call themselves a Christian and be willing to vote for a Democrat. You know, I got in an argument I'm a registered Republican, but was not happy with our party's nominee. And I got in an argument with someone about Trump's personality and the way that he sometimes can go overboard. And in trying to make my point, I almost became like Trump in trying to make my point. And then I was very upset at that. Very upset. Because there I was. I was the exact thing and being the exact person that inwardly sort of repulsed.
B says for him, he found it hard to vote for Trump as a Christian.
Ben, I think it's backed up by scripture, is that you can't have hatred in your heart and love God. And I'm not one of those that ranks one sin above the other. To have this heart or hunger for God and then to be able to so casually dismiss large groups of people for whatever reason, I've always found inconsistent and hard for me to put my head around. It just did not make sense to me. You know, President Obama brought out a lot of, he revealed a lot of truth about a lot of people because he was black. And I think Trump was a master at exploiting a lot of fears and digging up some of those things that I thought were buried and dead, you know, that I hoped were at least.
B thinks that though the election of Obama represented racial progress for many, for others, he understands, it represented a dangerous digression from the status quo, and that it actually inspired racial fears.
Build the wall. It will.
One of Trump's central campaign promises was to rid the country of undocumented immigrants.
But they have to go.
What if they have no place to go?
This go back to where you came from rhetoric directed at people of color isn't new, though. Historically, black people have always been told to go back to where they came from.
Well, we had that same problem, so you know how that thing bounced. They told us to go back home, but we didn't go. We still here. So
You are.
We still here. So live with it. Live with us. Y'all live with us. We'll live with y'all.
That's Roy Lacy and Frederick Clark, a couple of brick masons that we ran into.
We met them in Birmingham after we stopped by the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute. We wanted to check out an exhibit called Nuevolution, Latinos in the New South.
A large part of the exhibit focused on HB 56, highlighting how this is a modern civil rights issue.
We ran into the brick masons on our way out of the exhibit. They were standing in front of a tall bronze statue of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., just feet away from the 16th Street Baptist Church. That was the church that was bombed in 1963, which sparked the civil rights movement.
So we took out recording equipment and asked them about what they, as working Birmingham people, think of the influx of Latinos in the area.
They are people just like we are.
During the election, Trump riled up working class people, saying immigrants were taking jobs away from Americans.
And they're taking your jobs, and you better be careful.
And supporters of HB 56 said it would help with keeping jobs for the working class in Alabama.
Some people scared of changes, basically. You know, they're scared somebody's going to take their job. That's all. You know what I mean?
But Lacy and Clark aren't too concerned about the immigrant workforce in Birmingham.
You know, they do stuff a little cheaper, you know, but jobs, there's plenty of work.
Yeah.
You know, some people just think it's their country. They don't like visitors. You know what I mean?
We finished chatting, and they wished us safe travels as we continued our hunt for Latinos in Alabama.
Nice to meet y'all.
Yeah,
nice
I mean, you stay too. Long as you want to.
The Brick Mason's warm invitation for us to stay in Birmingham as long as we want is the opposite of what HB 56 is saying to some of Alabama's residents.
And you might say that Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric, like HB 56, is also sending a message. Many people who voted for Trump were galvanized by his promise to be tougher on immigration.
I got a card from Trump. They had it decorated and, you know, Trump, dear Beverly, thank you so much for...
This is Beverly Stark, who befriended Jeannie's parents when they lived in Bruton in the 1980s.
She and my parents used to hang out almost every week, and she still sends my parents Christmas cards.
We're in Bruton now, after driving hundreds of miles, because we wanted to see how it changed since the election. We went to Beverly first to find out why she voted for Trump, and it mostly came down to immigration.
My feelings is stop immigration. Stop anyone from coming in, period. Let's work with what we've got, straighten up the mess. If you don't have a work permit or a green card, and what you've done, you've come in and had two babies and they're Americans, I think that if you, this is me now, if you have a baby and you come in without any, you got over the thing to work and have a baby, that baby should not become American. It should stay whatever it, the country that you came from. I think Jenny needs to take a test for her to stay. I'm kidding, Jenny.
I sat there listening, and having lived in the South, I wasn't completely shocked at what I heard. These are things I've heard before, even if Beverly is saying this to my face. I know her, and I know the argument. You know, the one that says that we are not those immigrants. But still, I pushed a little, mostly because I wanted to understand how Beverly saw my family and how she saw others like us.
You voted for Trump, and our president is Trump, mm-hmm. Whose platform is kind of largely on immigration reform mm-hmm. and deporting immigrants. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about both loving my parents and embracing immigrants and people from different places and voting for Trump at the same time?
What did your parents do? First off, I admired them. They fought to get their green card. Jim and I talked about how stupid that you would give people that came in by a boat and then two educated people who are contributing to the United States that can't get a green card. I mean, I just thought that was so stupid. Immigrant sounds just, I don't know, dirty to me. I much prefer to have it named like 200 people from Ireland, 200 people from Cambodia. But I do think we need to limit at the present time. I am for shutting down, letting anyone in for a few years. Let's work out some problems we've got.
You don't hear me pushing back against Beverly because at the end of the day, she was our old neighbor and my parents are still friends with her. What do you say to the lady who saw you grow up but thinks no immigrants should be allowed in the country for a while? And this isn't something that Beverly just started feeling now, post-Trump. In a way, I think Beverly has always felt this way. For her, and for me, this isn't something new. As for my parents, though, that's a different story.
Because of the political climate now, have you felt things change?
Definitely. Now there's a permission. You have a permit to be able to discriminate or to voice that you don't like certain foreigners. I have never been asked so many times, where are you from? And when I say Dominican Republic, I have seen their faces like a little, oh, you're not Mexican, which is terrible.
That's Socorro Montalvo, Jeannie's mom. After talking to Beverly, we wanted to ask the Montalvos if they noticed a change in their day-to-day life post-election in Georgia.
The other day, we went to Toys R Us to buy a grandson's presents. And the lady went even farther to say, oh, you're from Dominica, but are you here legally or illegal? And I couldn't believe it. And there were other people around it. And I got very nervous first and then a little mad. And I said, I have been in this country 39 years and I have my papers, but I had to shout it because I got very upset that she was just shouting a question like that with like 10 other people in line and they were all looking at me. So yes, it has changed. I have felt worse now than before. The country is not in a good place right now. So the day to day, it's a matter of, I'm going to see if that person takes me, if that person likes me, Like I tell Roberto, speaking English when we are in a restaurant. So I'm going to stay out of trouble.
I asked them how they're emotionally dealing with all of this, and Mrs. Montalvo says she tries to laugh it off.
To me, that in the middle of a Toys R Us, a girl shouts, "Where are you from?" because of my accent, to me, is a funny story. I make things fun because I don't let them hurt me to the point where I get depressed.
So one of the things, Jeannie, that you mentioned right when we were kind of starting the road trip was that as a Latina growing up in the South, a lot of the time for you was spent thinking how to get out of the South.
Yeah, basically, I always wanted to leave. And I did do just that. Once I graduated high school, I took off and I never looked back. I just really felt like you couldn't be Latino in the South. There wasn't anybody who looked like me around me, and there were no Ricky Martins and J-Lo's like blowing up on the TV at the time. So
not from Alabama, certainly.
No. And if there's not really any circle of friends around you that are like you at the time, yeah, I felt out of place.
So how do you feel now? Because in a lot of ways, the whole experience of this road trip was, at least for me, it was really cementing that we have Latinos who are Southerners. They are proud Southerners. And they love the South, and they have no intention of leaving.
Well, it just felt like the road trip kept proving me wrong over and over again. I mean, from the people we talked to at Plaza Fiesta to the girl who was managing her family store in Bruton, Alabama. I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with where you live. You can obviously be Latino in the South. You can be Latino anywhere in the country, but it's kind of like your own personal journey to Latinidad. And however you find that, then it doesn't matter where you live. Lots of people love the South. Lots of Latinos love the South. They've made homes there. They're happy there. There's like this, home and family and cariño that you can get in the South, like despite all of the hardships that keeps getting thrown at them, that like you really get in the South that you may not get anywhere else in the country.
Because this is, in fact, where they've built their houses, where they've kind of put up their white picket fences, if you will. And they have found that in times of need, there is help. And that's what Southern hospitality is really all about.
How do I say goodbye?
All righty. So y'all take care, and thanks for listening to our Southern road trip. Y'all come back now, you hear?